Hello, and welcome to WealthSpire Advisors Investor Insights video. I'm Bobby Moyer, and I'm joined with Sandy Wiggins.
Good to be here, Bobby.
Good to be here, Sandy. So here we sit again. This is April. April's looking back at March and previous. It feels a little bit like deja vu. We had another month and another month of positive returns. Feels pretty good.
Yeah, let's keep it rolling.
Good first quarter. Let's get into the numbers.
Sounds good.
The S&P 500 was positive for its fifth consecutive month for March. The S&P 500 was up 3.2% and is up 10.6% for the first quarter. Growth and value did well in March, but growth outperformed value by over 4.7% during the first quarter. Mid-cap stocks had a great month and quarter, while small-cap stocks continued to lag year-to-date. The S&P Mid-Cap 400 was positive by 5.6%, outperforming the S&P 500 in March, and was positive by almost 10% for the quarter, just barely underperforming its large-cap counterpart. The S&P Small-Cap 600 was positive by 3.2% in March, outperforming large-caps by 2 basis points, but is only positive by 2.5% for the first quarter. Maybe the biggest surprise during the month was the leading sector, which was energy sector, as it returned 10.6%. Maybe equally as surprising as it's the benign performance of the technology sector, as it returned 2%. Other strong sector performers in March were utilities, up 6.6%, and materials, up 6.5%. There were no negative S&P 500 sectors in March, as consumer discretionary finished the month positive by just 10 basis points. The real estate sector was the only sector negative for the first quarter. There were a few strong performing sectors during the first quarter. Communication services led the way, up 15.8%, followed by energy, up 13.7%, technology up 12.7%, and financials 12.5%. An interesting fact, if you look at equal weight sector performance, energy is the leading sector, up 13.4%, while communication services, the leading market-weighted sector, is one of the worst equal-weighted sectors, up only 2%. Generally speaking, international markets also performed well. The U.S. dollar also strengthened in March, up around 1%, but the dollar was up 4.7% for the quarter.
Not only did stocks have a great month, but bonds also performed well. Generally, interest rates fell during the month of March, helping bond returns. The Bloomberg Aggregate Bond Index returned 92 basis points in March, but is still negative for the first quarter, down 78 basis points. The High Yield Index was up 1.2% in March and is now positive by 1.5% year-to-date. There were a few commodity returns worth noting. Cocoa was up 147% year-to-date, hogs up 15%. Gold and silver both rallied in March, returning 8% for the month, with copper up 4%. We've also talked earlier about the strong performance of the energy sector. The price of crude was up over 7% during the month of March.
So Sandy, those are some good numbers we just went over. And I think, you know, I'll quickly just hit the quick market perspective. 5 months, 5 months in a row of consecutive positive returns for the S&P 500. It's a really good start to the year, a really good first quarter, and not what a lot of people expected. You know, we saw November, December being very, very positive, a lot of breath and very strong markets, a lot of skepticism coming into the year. It's an election year. We talk about this a lot. You generally see choppiness in the first quarter, especially February, March. We didn't see much of that this year. It just was an uptrend. The S&P is in a bull market, and the market just keeps continuing to churn higher. So investors are probably feeling pretty good where we sit today. And I know the Fed and inflation, all these things we've been talking about, is a reason for that potentially, and the economy, obviously. So there was a Fed meeting that we saw just, 2 weeks ago in March. What happened there?
Yeah, well, I think, talking about the economy and the inflation and interest rates and the Fed, it's all one big ball of wax. And the Federal Reserve meeting was positive. You know, the dot plot, was a big part of that topic. And
the dot plot being where the Fed members vote on where they think interest rates and some other things are going to be at the end of this year, next year, and
right,
a long-term rate.
Right, and out of that exercise, they reaffirmed the expectation or anticipation of 3 rate cuts, 0.25% each of those, sometime during the remainder of this year.
Yep.
And when that's going to occur, when it's going to start, that's still up in the air. They commented that they're waiting for data to show sustainable movement of inflation down to that target of 2% to be the first trigger for the first rate cut. And is that going to be June? Might be a little early, but maybe June.
Yeah, well, they don't want to start cutting rates, right? And see inflation reaccelerate. So here we sit. They want to see that sustainably at 2% and feel confident.
Yep. The other aspects of what they do, the levers they pull is quantitative easing or quantitative tightening. And we talked a lot about quantitative easing in 2008 and 9. Quantitative tightening, they experimented with it in 2018, 19.
Yep.
And basically with that, those terms mean quantitative easing means through some of their mechanisms of bond buying or selling, they're putting more money into the economy. They're adding dollars that consumers can use. That's easing, quantitative easing.
And an example of that is the balance sheet, right? The Fed's balance sheet went from under a trillion in 2007, I think, to nine trillion just a year ago. And now I think we're below 8 trillion. So that tightening is taking that money out of the system, which is tightening and should help.
Less dollars.
Market doesn't care though.
Well, it does. It's interesting how all that shakes out. But the quantitative tightening, in essence, is just pulling money out of the economy, so consumers have less dollars to work with, and so that too is expected to slow. They didn't give specifics about how much they're going to reduce the tightening, but the combination of the likelihood of rate reductions, talk of quantitative tightening, the market is liking that. And I think one thing that we've talked about in prior meetings and discussions here is the misalignment between what the market wants and hopes and where the Fed perhaps is in their thinking. Over the last month or so, I think that's much closer to alignment than we've had. And that's a healthy thing for the economy and the markets, I think.
Yeah, I think so. My takeaway from the whole meeting was, you know, I thought he was going to be dovish, right? And by dovish, I mean talk about cutting rates. But we got a little bit of hot inflation readings in January, February. That was a little bit concerning. The labor market continues to be very strong. Maybe some small cracks, but even the initial jobless claims we just got were very positive. So the job market is hot. Inflation's running a little hot. GDP revised higher again. Atlanta Fed for GDP now is looking at, 2.5, somewhere in there for the second quarter. We had strong third quarter GDP. So all these things coming in when you have stronger economy is, why would we cut rates? Why would we even talk about cutting rates when the economy is that strong? And yet he was still dovish, in my opinion. He still came out and was talking. You mentioned the three cuts for the committee and their forecast for the end of the year. So I find that, I think, bullish for the market, maybe a little bit concerning. We're seeing some commodity prices accelerate. Oil is up, gold, copper, Bitcoin, if you want to throw that in there. So there's been some, cocoa is up 60% for the month. Not good at Easter time, but you know, here it is, here we are, and they were still dovish. So I think that maybe that's part of what the market liked. Interest rates are hanging in there, and the market's doing okay with it.
Yeah, if you think about where we were a year, 2 years ago, and if back then we said, here's where we're going to be today, I would have a hard time believing that the economy would be able to stand up to all these rate increases and still growing and showing resilience. So
yeah, I think a big part of that is productivity, right? Yeah, that's AI, artificial intelligence, and it's actually being seen in the marketplace now, or in the corporations, and they're feeling a little bit more confident. CFOs are starting to feel better. And productivity is a huge thing. And if you can grow productivity, that's big for the economy. And I think that's the underlier of why the economy is doing so well. And to your point, how are we able to withstand these higher interest rates? It is really mind-blowing, but the dynamics of the labor market and the labor shortage from a supply, and then the housing market and the shortage there is holding that up. It's not having the intended impact, I don't think, these higher rates that the Fed would like to kind of crush some of these areas of the market that are hot.
Yeah, well, I think if we can have these higher rates, it's a healthier rate environment than we've been in a long time. Zero rates is artificially low and not sustainable. Now, having higher interest rates when we do need the Fed to juice up the economy because it's slowing, perhaps approaching recession, they've got more latitude to do that now than they've had in a very long time. So all in all, I think it's a pretty good spot to be in.
Yeah, they always have a hard time timing that right because they want to wait for that confirmation of data, and the ship's already turned at that point. So we'll see if they're able to shake it out. We also had, you know, a little bit of news out of Washington on Congress.
Yeah, they passed the budget.
Yay!
Yeah, so we're not
down.
Yeah, and we're not going to deal with that, I guess, until another, you know, 6 months. We'll start to hear about it again. October is the next deadline.
Yep.
So that's obviously a good thing, and both Republicans and Democrats are going to take credit for that negotiation. Both are going to take credit for the strong economy. Obviously, the Biden administration wants to take credit for the strong economy. Potential Trump presidency, they're taking credit in anticipation of Trump winning. So certainly we'll have...
Everybody flopping down, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think you're right. I don't, you know, politics, we'll have the rest of the year to talk about that. The more we could stay away from that. But I think that getting a budget deal done was good, even though we were, I guess, didn't have a budget for 2 hours. But 2 o'clock in the morning, the Senate came through, and it was a good thing. You know, so as we go to wrap this up, you know, it's very easy, I think, to be skeptical in this environment. It's been, like we said, a very strong environment for stocks, right? We've seen for the last 5 months consecutively the market going up. We've seen since November 1st, the market's up over 25% over that period of time. So the common thing, maybe not common, is to be a little bit skeptical of the rally. But if you look at the numbers, this is actually still a very good and positive time for the market. One, April generally is pretty good, although it wouldn't surprise any of us to see choppiness, but we probably said that after January as well and never saw it. But also, when you look out after 12 months of seeing 5 months of the market up 25%, and there's been a lot of occurrences of this, I think there's only one in maybe over 100 scenarios where the market was negative over the next 12 months, and something the average return is about 15%. You have when the market's up 5 consecutive months in a row, it still ends up being, it's a very positive indicator. So don't fight the momentum. There is still momentum. The internals are very strong. And almost more importantly than that, I think all that is important of where the market is. It's really, though, the breadth of this market that we talked about a little bit of last month. We're starting to see it. Mid-cap outperformed large-cap. The S&P 400 outperformed the S&P 500 in the month of March by over 200 basis points. That's phenomenal. You saw international markets do very well, outperform the S&P 500.
Small cap
lagging a little bit still, but I think they were hit 52-week highs earlier, you know, towards the end of the month. You've had, I think, another positive is technology, which we've been talking about technology and the NASDAQ being a market leader, up 2% or maybe 2.5%, 2% for the month of March, underperforming the S&P. The NASDAQ underperformed the S&P. The leading sector in the S&P for March was energy, up over 10%. That's a positive. Materials was another strong one. Utilities, these are sectors we haven't been talking about it in very long. And so I think seeing this breadth is pretty remarkable. And we did have this large cap, mega cap rally for a good bit, but a little bit more breadth and other leadership coming through, I think would be a positive for the markets.
Yeah, and even with all that excitement and great news there, we've got to give our commercial for staying the course, making sure that you've got the right investment strategy for your particular risk tolerance and time horizon, and have that skepticalness, you know, a dose of that in your perspective, and not get ahead of yourself being too greedy or too fearful. Let your strategy drive, you know, what goes on with your portfolio.
Yeah, and finally in March, some of that asset allocation came out and worked, and we don't know how long that'll last, but I think, yeah, that's the story, is to stick to your discipline, stick to your strategy, and continue to invest the best you can and stay in the market, because that's more important. We see what happens even with some of the skepticism that we've seen over the last couple months.
Sounds good. Well, we'll report back, I guess, in another 30 days.
Yeah, sounds good. Take care.